You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or listen via Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. This is one of the concurrent panels just about to begin. We are going to be talking about leveraging political transitions in the tribal areas of Pakistan with an all-star panel. And we have just about 75 minutes, so we're going to get started right now. So I hope many of you, if not all of you, had a chance to listen to Sumbul's very compelling presentation earlier. And we have, as I said, an all-star panel with Mr. Abbas Khan and Dr. Jameela Razak, who are here from Pakistan, who traveled specifically from Pakistan. I think you arrived yesterday and Jameela arrived a few days ago. So I'll introduce them in more detail in just a few moments. But today we're here to discuss girls' education in the former federally administered tribal areas of Pakistan. And I want to give you just a little bit of context about the region before introducing, as I said, our panelists and what we'll be discussing over the next hour and 10 minutes. So the federally administered tribal areas of Pakistan, as they were known until earlier this year, until July of 2018, is an area on the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan of 5 million people. And until recently, it was governed by a law known as the Frontier Crimes Regulation under the Constitution of Pakistan, but separately. So this is an area really known for being quite lawless, where the writ of the state was not fully implemented, but now it is fully integrated, or it's in a transition process of being fully integrated into the province of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, which is the northwest, which was formerly known as the Northwest Frontier Province of Pakistan. We'll also call it KP. And now these districts are known as the newly merged districts as of July 16, 2018. And so what we will be talking about today is sort of girls' education in Fatah, the barriers faced by girls in particular there, and the opportunities that girls have looking ahead, all in the context of the political transition that is currently underway in that region. So let me introduce our panelists. You all know Sumbul from earlier in the day, but let me briefly reintroduce her. So Sumbul Naveed is an education specialist with USAID Pakistan and currently an Echidna Global Scholar at Brookings. Her work spans 19 years at both the classroom and policy level. She has been involved in designing a number of education programs, evaluations, and research studies, including the early grade reading assessment. You'll see that actually on this panel, we have a combined number of many decades of experience. Jameela Razak, on Sumbul's right, is the co-founder and president of the APA Aziz Trust. And she was 3 years ago an Echidna Global Scholar here at the Center for Universal Education in 2015. Jameela has spent the last 2.5 decades contributing to the field of education by working in diverse roles, systems, and locations. And currently, she's leading a number of programs for the promotion of girls' education in Pakistan in collaboration with local networks and organizations working at the grassroots levels. Mr. Abbas Khan is the additional director for planning and monitoring in the Directorate of Education for the tribal districts, the ex-Fatah region in Pakistan. His position involves planning for the establishment of primary schools planning for the establishment of schools at the primary, secondary, and post-secondary level. And he coordinates with all donors that promote education, particularly for girls. And he supports the education department of the tribal districts. Just a couple of words on Sumbul's paper before we move forward. So in Sumbel's paper, she looks at the education sector plan that was developed by the Directorate of Education for the newly merged districts. And this is a comprehensive five-year plan. And she identifies the gaps in the education sector plan versus vis-a-vis girls' education. And uses that to look at the barriers and opportunities, as I said, to girls' education. So, you know, one of the key things to think about when you think about the Fatah region is that it is a post-war region because it has, as Sumbel has mentioned, dealt with decades of Talibanization, displacement, and violence, but has emerged. Now, in as much as, you know, there is still violence in the region, but it has really emerged much more as a post-war region. And so that is the context in which we'll be looking at things. As I go forward, we will be hearing from all our panelists, and we're really going to be looking a little bit at the myths and realities surrounding girls' education in Fatah, the infrastructure problems there, the transition as we're looking ahead, and if we have time, which I hope we do, getting down to some more details granularly at the classroom level, at looking at providing transportation, looking at teachers, and so on. So without further ado, I'd love to start with Jamila and Mr. Khan. If you could both describe your role in promoting girls' education and your experience in Pakistan, and comment on what you think the opportunities are stemming from this political transition and merger.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay, thanks very much. My name is Abbas Khan. And I'm working as an additional director in the Directorate of Education, erstwhile Fatah, and now it is known as a newly merged district, as Madiha has told you. Actually, my work is about the planning for the entire Fatah. Fatah region has got seven agencies. Now they are converted into districts. And six FRs, frontier regions. Actually, frontier regions are not that much tribal areas like the seven areas. They are adjacent to, they are in between the settled area and the tribal area. For example, FR Peshawar, FR Deir Khan. So these are adjacent area with settled area. So we do planning for them as well. As my job is involved, I have worked as deputy director in the Directorate of Education, KP, as well as I remain project director for the promotion of education, girls' education in Fatah as well, and which was actually World Food Program, UNWFP assisted program. And the aim was just to incentivize the female students and bring them to the school. So the results were very good at that time. And in case of planning, we do planning for establishment of schools. There is criteria, which is approved criteria from the government side, that how we will establish school for the girls and for the boys as well, and how much population will be there, and what will be the distance from the nearest school. And secondly, we also keep in mind the GIS system as well, because in the past some of the schools were constructed which were not feasible. And now we are taking help of modern techniques and we use GIS. Then we do not establish, middle or secondary schools, but we upgrade the existing primary schools to middle and middle schools to high school and then high schools to higher secondary schools. Now, we will discuss later on about the enrollment and other issues, but at the moment, I just want to mention that the planning department of education department, it also deals with the soft component as well. The soft component is the teacher training, the CPD, the continuous professional development for the teacher. Because on one side, if we are bringing more children to the school, on the other hand, we are supposed to give them quality education. And for quality education, the training of the teacher is essential part. So we want to keep them, you know, abreast with with the modern techniques for teaching purposes. So we do planning for the teacher training as well. So these are the basic work which I do in the Directorate of Education, FATA. And secondly, now we have merged with the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, and my role is intact. There is no change has been taken place in my role. I do the same thing because it's instruction from the government that the Directorate of erstwhile FATA will remain intact. It is because that the government is giving top priority to the FATA region. Because if we are merged with the KP, the directorates are merged with the KP, so there will be no focus on the tribal region. The government, the provincial government, as well as the central government, they both are focusing on the education and other social sectors as well. So they want to keep the directorates and the staff intact so that they may be able to work and focus on the most neglected areas of the FATA. So my role is still intact. Thank you.
Just very quickly to give you a little bit of context politically, Pakistan in July 2018 held general elections, and the current government is led by the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf Party, the PTI. The Prime Minister is Imran Khan, and this party was in power. This is its first time in power at the federal level, but this party was in power at the provincial level in the previous term as well. So it has experience in KP, so that's the in the Khyber Pakhtunkhwa district region. And so it is particularly important and relevant now that the merger is taking place. And this is sort of a key sort of component of Imran Khan's vision of the region. So we'll go to Jamila. Jamila, if you could talk a little bit about sort of if you see any potential pitfalls in this moment, but also the opportunities that you see in this moment, given your experience.
Thank you very much. The context has been laid out very elaborately by Madiha and then Abasa. But I would just add that into this context, we need to take a longer shot of the history as well, because FATA at one time was the land of music and hospitality, and then War of Titans happened. And so these people in FATA, when we go there and when we start working in the region, we have to start with this historical perspective as well, that these people are afflicted and affected by war for a long time. And they have, as Sumbul also said in her presentation, that people, girls living there, are as intelligent, as warm-hearted, and as loving as rest of the country and rest of the world are. So that would be my starting point. And then the opportunities, some of these you have alluded to, but two main things which I see as opportunities are, one is the governance system, which will be now an improved version of what existed before this merger. Now, FATA will be part of larger provincial government, which has more structured government in place. And because before this merger, FATA was reliant on, off and on, support from federal government for funding for education, for allocation of posts. There were no teachers in the schools. And when FATA applied for more posts, sometimes their cases were held in the in many offices at the federal level for many months. So they will get a better, quicker response to their needs. That is the improved governance is one opportunity. Second is better monitoring system. Because FATA, as it was under-resourced, both financially and in human resource perspective. So when they'll be part of the provincial government, KP government, along with other provincial governments, now have extensive monitoring systems which are using tabs and real-time data collection from schools, whether the teachers are in the schools, and they're going beyond just attendance of school and teachers and students, but also looking at the learning outcomes to an extent, that what are children learning in schools. So when FATA will be part of the provincial government, larger system, they will benefit from this monitoring system of the schools, which will monitor the facilities, teachers, the need for teachers, and the learning process happening in the schools. That is the opportunities part, two main points which I could see. And then you said that as soon like there is enough now background to give you an idea that what the situation of education more generally and of girls' education is in FATA. Like there are more than 78% girls who are out of school, who should be in school in compulsory school age. So, and gender parity is one of the lowest in FATA region. So these are these establish that we have is very clear need to work more on education and girls' education in FATA. But then who will do it and how it will be done? These are the two questions which now need to be figured out. One then is the actors, like who will take action and who will work in FATA. First is the government of Pakistan, now government of FATA, whether directorate remains as a directorate of FATA or there is any other structure. That is the basic constitutional responsibility of government of Pakistan. One major actor would be government. Second will be donors, donor community. Then I know that number of donors are now designing their programs for FATA region. And here with actors are the pitfalls. Because you need to, I sometimes use this term that it is a bit provocative, so excuse me for being. So you need to get down high horse of being saviors, the saviorism. We'll have to work with people as partners and work with local people, find local partners, local solutions, and don't jump into the field with the ideas which are conceived and developed somewhere else. And that has been said a number of times. Okay. And then there'll be international NGOs, local NGOs who'll be then gearing themselves for the funding which will be available through different donors. So there I'll go back to the paper which I wrote for as a Kidna scholar 3 years ago. And I laid out I studied three models of like how we can improve girls' education services in Pakistan. And irrespective of where those models were, I came up with four steps process. And one was, four steps of this process are still valid, and I can quote those, that one was that first thing is go with respect for the local culture and We sometimes, because people are different from us, it does not mean that we can devalue. And we that is the entry point, that you go with genuine respect for the local culture and local people and their traditions. And the second was to make alliances. Like, there are gatekeepers. It has been referred to Medallo and Mayada in the morning session, that there are religious leaders, there are political leaders, there are community leaders, they are the gatekeepers. Make alliance with them, but then you need a wider network of people, which will be those people who we have to win over as our allies. That is a wider network of community leaders. And when we get into the field, then we have to deliver. There is where the real test comes, that it is whatever commitments are made by the government, by the donor, by the international or the national NGOs, they have to take the responsibility and they have to be accountable for all those targets, for all those the scope of work or the budget they get. And those are three steps. And the fourth is that make the services relevant for the local needs and local people. And I spoke at length about that. You can refer to it. I'll not go into details. But that was that what people see as relevant for them. What is more like where they see the value, the quality, what is quality? Whether it is quality from a standard, an academic standard developed in a university, or the quality, how parents and communities see it as a quality. So these are the important considerations, and these can be pitfalls as well. So that is how I see the issue. Thank you.
Thank you both for very comprehensively setting sort of the stage, as it were, and really sort of driving forward the discussion. Sumbul, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about your field work, essentially, how you got access to the communities that you talked to and what surprised you. But I would, before that, I just wanted to again cite a couple of statistics that you cited in your presentation. The fact that 37% of girls are enrolled in primary schools in the newly merged districts, but only 5% of girls are enrolled in secondary schools. These very striking statistics. 49% of boys are enrolled in primary schools, but again, only 16% of boys are enrolled in secondary schools. So if you can, and we know that one of the things that differentiates Fatah from the rest of Pakistan is the history of violence and Talibanization there. But if you can tell us a little bit about some of the sort of the barriers and that you identified, distance, the attitudes of parents, access to teachers, work opportunities for girls, how these differ in Fatah relative to the rest of Pakistan? Because as all of us know, a lot of these same barriers to girls' education exist in the rest of Pakistan. What makes Fatah different?
Yeah, thank you very much for this comprehensive question. Before I dive deep into the second part of your question, I would like to focus on the first part, and that is that the entry for me to collect data in this region was made possible because of people like Abbasab. Because in this highly restricted security risk area, you cannot enter. Full stop. You need some support from the local communities, from people like Abbasab in the government, to get into that at the first place. And then you asked me what surprised me. These were girls in that region. So they were really excited. When they started talking to me, they had a long list to tell me to give as a message to the government, including from the water they needed in school, washroom, boundary walls, transportation. And then the best message that I got from one of the girls from grade 6 was, can you please make it possible to have science education in our school? I want to be a doctor. I'm in grade 6. Is it possible for you to do it like in the next 2-3 years so that by the time I get there, I have the opportunity to study science? So that surprised me. Because like many of you, I wasn't able to go to FATA. I was just listening to some stories because there is no data available on this region that I could read to and really get an idea of what is happening. The only stories I could read were from the Talibanization time. You know, this has happened, bombing, killing, and that's it. So what exactly is happening in the education sector was not clearly known. So that's why I think this study that I've just done is going to help us all as partners to see, you know, where we need to start with. Because this is a war zone that has, you know, everything is demolished. So it's taking a new start now with the peace establishment as the first step. So girls in that area really need a lot of support, and so do others who are trying to make education possible for these girls. So that's surprising. The other thing surprising for me was teachers. Teachers. And when I talked to them, the first thing that excited them was that somebody for the first time has come down to talk to them. So that was the most exciting thing for them. And they then again, like girls, had a huge list of their own problems rather than talking about the girls' problems themselves. So it's a complex issue. It does not stop just on girls. It is a complex issue interconnected with several other things happening in that region. So now I'll get to your second part. And that is what makes us different. So, you know, generally, you see many other girls even in not going to school in the rest of Pakistan. But if you just increase those problems 100 times, that's what FATA is. So in the rest of Pakistan, people have the opportunity, girls specifically, parents, to see that other girls are getting education. They have different roles to play. But those in FATA were in limbo. They were isolated. They haven't seen girls into different roles that they can play other than just, you know, getting married and taking care of children, which are sometimes more than a dozen. So that's the main difference, because the community in this region did not have an exposure. One interesting finding that you will see in my paper as well, and I'm going to really focus on it when I move forward with my future writings, is that exposure for this community was a turning point, especially when they moved from FATA to the neighboring province as temporarily displaced people. So that gave them an exposure to the neighboring province to see that people who speak the same language, who wear the same clothes, who have the same lifestyle, are having a different life, where the girls can drive a car, where the girls can be doctors, they are in offices. So many people in FATA really found it maybe not like something comfortable, but there would be many others who thought it was something to change. It was something to ponder on. And that, I think, is the beginning of change in this region. So people like Abasa, because he also belongs to FATA, are also, you know, a source of encouragement. His daughters, who have done graduation, right? So his daughters are a source of, you know, understanding and exposure to many other people in FATA, especially those who live in the farther areas towards the Afghanistan border, because they are the ones who had no exposure to a normal life, as compared to those living near the edge of FATA, which is near KP, and they have easy access to KP. So that makes this region different, and that makes education problems different for girls as compared to the rest of Pakistan. Do you have anything to add?
Yes, please. I mean, just one thing that I would interject and say is thanks for giving that sort of on-the-ground perspective of girls in FATA. I can say that I actually realize that I've neglected to introduce myself. So my name is Medea Afzal. I'm a non-resident fellow here at Brookings, and much of my work actually looks at education and extremism in Pakistan. And I wasn't able to travel to FATA for my own research, but the university students whom I interviewed in Lahore, many of them were boarding sort of boarders from Fatah, all men, though. So it was a very refreshing perspective that I heard on extremism, etc., from them. But I did not have the chance to meet any young women who were university students from Fatah. Yes, please, Mr. Abbas, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Madhya. I'm just adding a few things to Sumbul talkings. Actually, you know, the teacher, the people of the Fatah, they are very simple people. They don't want to send their children to the school. And their mindset is like this. For example, when we do enrollment drive, each year we do enrollment drive in Fatah, that is in March, April, and then in October. So we cannot, you know, openly ask the parents to send their daughters, their sisters to the school. This is the situation. We ask them to send their children to the school. It means if we directly say to anyone to bring your daughter to the school, so this is a, you know, a bad thing for them. They don't like words like this. So we openly ask them to send their children to the schools. And up to exposure, yes, they are not exposed to the society. They are very simple people. They are just restricted to their home. I just want to mention one incident. Once a man from the Fatah, his wife was ill, and he was supposed to take her to the doctor. So first he was reluctant that there was no female doctor. Then he became aggrieved and took her to the doctor. And the doctor was investigating her and asked the lady, okay, show me your mouth, open your mouth. The man said, no, she will not show you her mouth, because she is my wife, and she will show the mouth only to me and not to you. So this is the case with the people over there. And secondly, I just adding to teacher absenteeism, which Dr. Jamila has talked about. So there is teacher absenteeism, and this is one of the major issue for all of us who are working in the directorate, because we hire teacher, we recruit teachers, but local teachers are unavailable. Sumbul has mentioned this issue in her paper, and we hire teacher from adjacent area or from the settled area. So due to the uncertain condition and security reason, those teachers who are not from the local villages, they do not come to the school. So automatically, when they are not coming to the school, the children come to the school, they wait for their female teacher. So if she is not coming to the school, automatically they leave the school. So this also increases the rate of the dropout as well.
Thank you. So actually, Mr. Abbas, if you could expand a little bit on what you discussed earlier, and talk about whether you think it's naive to think that an approach that worked in KP can work in the newly merged districts for the PTI government. And if you can talk about some of the infrastructural, bureaucratic, economic obstacles that you see ahead. You know, you talked about teacher absenteeism being a problem, but if you could talk a little bit more about the infrastructural problems you see in the transition ahead.
Thank you. Actually, when we are merged with the KP, you know, the KP government has been focusing, the PTI government is there, and they have been focusing on education. They have allocated more than 28% of their budget to education. And now we see that the KP province is on the top of education among all the provinces in Pakistan. So once we are merged with KP, so all those facilities, all those things will also be automatically come to FATA. And nowadays, we have been holding meeting, you know, with the high ups, the officials of the KP government, and they have been focusing on education, both for girls and for the boys, to bring at par with the KP. And probably there will be no issue, you know, while we are merging with the KP, because they are already ready for the same. They have worked on the for the plan for the merger of the FATA district with the KP. And there are certain, you know, things which are already introduced in the KP and which has profound effect on the schooling. For example, IMU system. IMU system is an independent monitoring system which is already there with the help of the DFID. And its results are marvelous. The teacher attendance there is, you know, that is ensured. The quality of education has already been improved there. And secondly, the infrastructure. Now we have only two room schools. And automatically, you know, the infrastructure will also improve. And thirdly, I won't take too long because there are certain issues, but I'm not taking too long. For example, the basic facilities in a school, they are also meager in FATA. You know, last year, a survey was conducted in Khyber Agency, and it was found that 50% of the area, female in the female school, 50% of the girls, they left the school because of the insufficient, you know, the washrooms in the school. If this is the condition of the school, obviously the female students will be reluctant and they will be unwilling to come to the schools. So obviously the KP government is focusing and they are watching these things, and they have been trying to allocate funds for this, and they have made in collaboration the FATA 10-year socio-economic plan and 5-year socio-economic plan. They are mega projects. Actually, they want to bring FATA at par with the KP. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. So we will, in about 10 minutes, come to all of you with and ask you to ask questions. And so we'll open this up. But in the meantime, I wonder if, Jamila, if you could tell us a little bit about community schools, and if you think community schools are a lever we should pay particular attention to, because Sumbul very nicely pointed out the numbers of community schools in her paper, and that they far outnumber actually the number of government-provided schools. Thanks.
Yeah, that was part of my paper as well, that I also looked at the community schools as a possibility to promote girls' education in different parts of the country. So community schools are a big opportunity, and there are reasons for it, because they have been established very close to the homes of girls. That's why parents send even girls and willingly send their girls to these schools. Secondly, that these schools are the teachers there are also from the local community, so that element of trust, that who is the teacher their girls are going to be with. So these positives of community schools are there, but at the same time, they cannot be left to be governed by those organizations who are working on project modes, because most of these community schools have been established through donor funding, and these have been established under some project for any program. So the long-term sustainability of these community schools, now government will have to establish or develop some infrastructure. It exists for other provinces. There are education foundations where there are possibilities, and there are different models of public-private partnerships. And there are community schools and low-fee private schools which have been established in rest of the country under these infrastructures. So I hope that with merger of FATA with KP, those education foundation infrastructure will also be used to regulate, monitor the quality, and then provide support for these schools. Because these schools are the only option at the moment, till the time government constructs numerous schools, because in my study, when I went there in Fata 3 years ago, these community schools, the basic criteria of the establishment of these community schools was that there was no other school, primary school, in the radius of 3 to 5 kilometers in mountainous areas, in war-affected areas, in insecure area. That is a long distance. So there are no public schools. There is no provision of schools, government schools or private schools in the area. So this is the only option for girls. So community schools are making great contribution. They are accepted in the communities because they have been established on that process which I studied, and I drew that process from those examples of establishing community schools in Fata and other parts of the country. So I would say that these are there, and they are the only option, and there should be more support from government for these community schools, and there should be regulation for their quality control and monitored and supported so that they can perform and provide the services to those girls which have, those who have no access to any other service, neither private or public.
That's actually really useful. So the education foundations that you refer to in Punjab and in Sindh have been quite successful. The Punjab Education Foundation, the Sindh Education Foundation, you know, their programs have been evaluated and found to increase girls' enrollment in particular. So thank you for mentioning that. So while before we wrap up in terms of the panel and come to you, Sumbul, I wonder if you could take your policy recommendations sort of that you came up with at the end of your presentation, and that are of course in your paper, and talk about sort of what comes next in terms of this transition, right? And talk a little bit about any particular challenges or problems that you want to identify, talking about teachers, if you would like to, or at the classroom level, at the, you know, at sort of the granular level that you see going forward.
It's really hard because there is so much to do in this region that I'm still struggling with where to start with. Because definitely the first thing that these girls need are schools, but I cannot provide them schools. So then is the next step. So what else can I do? So the most important thing that I'm thinking is maybe looking at the overall, I won't say curriculum, I would say syllabus, to see what are the gender gaps. So you have heard Maida talking about gender mapping of the syllabus. So maybe that's one thing that we can do to really focus on. One of my important findings, and the very interesting findings, was that there is lack of general understanding on the broader purpose of education for girls and roles that they can play within a society, because people haven't seen those roles, girls being played in that region. So I think doing that and then incorporating something in the teaching learning material is going to help that region to look beyond just having girls as good mothers. So I think that's one thing that we can do. The other thing which I think can be helpful is in terms of having some sort of awareness within the community that, yes, these roles are possible, and then how they can help their girls to really, you know, get to the education and schools. So these are the important things that we can work on, along with maybe having 21st century skills included in their education, because quality education is another issue. So if the girls are not going to, if those girls who are going to school are dropping out, the most important reason that my research identifies is the quality of education, because they don't get anything when they even are able to access schools.
Very quickly, before we come to you, Jamila, if you could talk a little bit about anything that you would like to add from your experience working on the AGES project, which, for those of you who don't know, is a USAID-funded program focusing on girls' education and skills development in that region. Anything that you see about the merger creating opportunities or challenges for programs going forward there? And you talked about that a little bit, obviously, at the very beginning.
Yeah, but when I was mentioning these different stakeholders and actors, then one thing which I would add to that part is the I would use the term diaspora, because there are a number of families who have left FATA long time ago. They are settled in different parts of Pakistan. Their girls, their women are playing the roles in society which other Pakistani women are. So they are very effective group that they can be involved in promoting girls' education back in FATA. That is something which is an opportunity, because I myself, in my personal circle, I know many people who are serving in different parts, in different departments, in different cities of Pakistan, and their daughters are going to universities, schools, and they are the people whom people from FATA will easily relate to, because they are related to those families. And if that is a very powerful group, that if they can be used as the messengers, and and their women and their daughters and their girls in those families can be used as role models. Because as Sumbul has said, that there are families who could not leave. They are the ones who are most marginalized. Whoever had means to move out has moved out, and they are settled in other cities and in other urban centers. So, but they have families, they go back to those areas. If they can be activated and they can be used, they can be very effective group of people who can bring that social change and social advocacy we have been talking about over the last 2 days, that what is the most effective way to bring change, whether the policy advocacy or the social advocacy or both, and if the both are going to be effective. So along with these policy changes, the social change, the mindset of people, use people, local people from the same area, That is my one addition to the discussion which we already had. Thank you.
Excellent. We will open it up for Q&A. There are mics on in the back. This lady right here. Yes, yeah. And we will take a couple of questions at a time. And if you could, I think it was, but you can go ahead and then we'll come to you. We'll take a couple of questions at a time. And if you could limit your question to one question and have it be a question, not a comment, that would be wonderful.
Hi, I'm Samira Daniels. I'm interested in education. This is a question. You were talking about the broader purpose of education and how you know, you would like to communicate that to the girls. Do you see any models? I mean, India has, you know, a great deal of you know, research on this, and of course Europe, England, and I wonder if you could draw upon that, or do you think that there's some sort of intrinsic, you know, that you can cull something about, you know, about Pakistan, India, that culture of South Asia, and how you can sort of meld that into some that would bring more meaning to the community.
Yes, if you could pass the mic.
First of all, thank you very much for the panel, and I think this is a good follow-up. I'm Urvashi Sani, and just to introduce myself and why I find this so interesting, my parents migrated from Rawalpindi, and my in-laws are from the frontier province, really, from Peshawar.
So you are from my city.
Yes. So I'm really half Pakistani, Indian, whatever. So my point is that, which is why I identify so closely to everything you've been saying, both very strong patriarchal cultures, actually the same culture. And You know, Simbal, the points you were raising about all the girls, even though they come from Fatah, which is a war zone, like you said, all the conversations you had with the girls and with the teachers, what I'm struck by is that even though the areas I've been working in are not war zones, I'm in, you know, some remote areas in Rajasthan, remote areas in UP, and rural areas, and some not so remote either, the points are exactly the same. The girls have just the same, in fact, the same thing. And we have science education and the teachers talking about boundary walls and bathrooms and all of those, exactly the same, right? And so, I mean, and also in terms of exposure, I think the rural, even in the rest of Pakistan, as I know in the rest of many parts of India, they have similarly no exposure, and there's a difference between the urban and rural. My question, Abbasi Saab, was really to you about, you know, you mentioned that when you go, you, the way you talk to them is that, can you send your children to school and not your girls? And you mentioned that example about the man who said, well, you can look at my, I mean, I look at it, but you're not a doctor, kind of a thing. My point was that these are very strong patriarchal mindsets, right? And as long as we keep pussyfooting around them, I don't know if they will change. So when is a good time to address them directly and to actually attack patriarchy very directly? Because that is the reason we have all these problems, right? So whether it's in Pakistan or India or anywhere else, and we are the same people, when do we attack them directly? We found it very useful to attack it directly, by the way. And of course, you face some resistance, but it melds. And the girls have learned to attack it very directly, too. And in classrooms, we attack it very directly. Raise the issue of girls' rights to themselves and to their lives, but and of course to an education, but mainly. So I'm wondering, when do you think, Abbasi Saab, that it is a good time to attack these direct, to attack patriarchy directly?
Excellent question.
We're all waiting.
Let's go to the panel, and then we'll move to the audience again.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
People are more eager.
Okay. You know, saying directly to them something is very difficult task. Even we have, you know, law there, Article 25A, which emphasizes on the free and compulsory education for the children from 5 to 16. And then all provinces have law. But, you know, its implementation in the erstwhile Fatah was very difficult, you know. Even instructions were issued to the political agents that parents should send their children to the school. But unfortunately, it did not work there because the system, there was no system actually. There was FCR, Sumbal and Madiha has talked about it. And no proper law implementation was there. Now, fortunately, we are part of the KP, and all the law which are promulgated by the provincial government or federal government will equally be implemented in the Fatah region, our newly merged district, and hopefully the parents will send their children to the school. And secondly, I just want to mention you that there is no electricity in most of the region. And let's say 90% of the Fatah do not have electricity. So no television is there, no electronic media is there. So they have no access, you know, to the modern world. The only source of information to them is the Voice of America Radio Diva, which is spoken, which is listened there in the Pashto. So how can we expect that an enlightened nation will emerge from there? If we give them some opportunity to have access to modern techniques and to other people, to models, then obviously they will strive to have such girl student, girl daughter like Malala Yousafzai. Even I think nobody knows about Malala Yousafzai in the tribal area, if you ask them. Yeah.
I think just to sort of follow up on Urvashi's question, in some ways, you know, you talked very eloquently about the problems in Fatah, but the patriarchy problem is something that exists beyond Fatah. And so maybe Jamila or Sumbul, if you would like to address that question and take the other lady's question, and then we'll go back to the audience.
I think, yes, there is something that I can even relate to my research. Not many, but, you know, a few teachers shared with me about having this patriarchal issue, not just within their own family, with parents, because those girls were allowed to get education because their parents were really good at that and they understood the value of education for girls. But once they got married, you see, so there was a feeling of insecurity in their husbands. So it's so deep-rooted into the culture that I definitely agree with Abbas Saab that it's not like something to be done like that. There is no one starting point that you can start with, especially when people don't have access to any kind of media. I'm so glad that, you know, recently some mobile companies have started having a mobile service in that region. And one of the broadband suppliers is my best friend. And he supplies broadband to Islamabad. And I'm always, you know, talking to him. Every time I meet him, I ask him, what about Fatah? What about Fatah? And then very recently, they opened up an office in Peshawar. And I was like, oh, that's a good news. Because now you are in Peshawar and there is just a few miles more to cover when you get into Fatah. Because I can see that, you know, even those very few areas where television is available, girls and especially women are watching TV and they are watching dramas. That's what I learned from teachers and students. And they said, you know, that's a great... And they told me that if you can convey some message through TV to our parents, they will change their mindsets. So... I mean, it's just starting. We cannot say this is possible and that is not possible. For me, everything is possible. But it needs some time. We have to just keep an eye on what is available and make the best use of that. And for me, media of any sort is our opportunity.
And then I think we missed one point, that there are no courts of law in Fatah. People don't have any court to go to if they are wronged. So with merger, that would be a great opportunity for people to have police force, because there are traditional jirgas, mostly headed by male members. So that is a change in that system when there was no alternative system was not, I think, possible. But with this merger, with these opportunities coming up, so laws which are there in the rest of the country, like compulsory, like minimum age of marriage, that is now a law. And there are a number of now cases where girls show up in the courts and in the police stations that we are being married, and that is blown up in media. That brings another the connection which Sumbul was just saying, that if there are laws, if there are courts, if there are police stations, and if there is media, then we can expect change.
That's excellent. All right. We will take three more questions at this stage.
I think we missed responding to her question. That was important. If I could just quickly respond to
very
that.
Quickly.
Yes, there are some good models which are available. But the question for me is when I choose them, I need to first look at that, whether it will work in Fatah or not, given all the circumstances we have just talked about. So very recently, I have heard about Girls Rising having a great project starting, I think already started, in Pakistan. So that's a great inspiration for me, that is based on video messaging, storytelling. So that's one opportunity. But because that too is related to media, I have to wait for the time till that area gets access to some media. So yes, models are there, but definitely I'll have to be careful about how and when to use it.
Right. This lady right here, then in that aisle, over there, right there, yes.
Thank you very much for this is a great panel. I'm Gulcan from Malala Fund. So I have a question to Mr. Abbas. So you mentioned that KP has 28% of the provincial budget allocated to education. And now with this merger, I'm wondering, is KP going to have like increase its budget, total budget, to meet the needs of both KP and FATA, or is the most of the budget going to be allocated to FATA and, you know, the budget will stay the same? Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's take a couple more questions and then we'll come back to you. So right across the aisle, please. Yes.
Hi, my name is Zainab and I'm also from Pakistan. I really appreciate all the work that you're doing. It's of a very large interest to me personally. Sumbha, you had mentioned earlier that one of your recommendations was engaging the local community and community partners. And earlier, Mayada had also mentioned the use of engaging local religious muftis as a part of her project. So my question is, given the context of FATA and the Talibanization of it, how successful do you think it would be to engage local religious leaders there? And how much of an effect would that have? Or have you seen any sort of successful endeavors of the sort being made?
Yeah. Great. Can we have some more questions? And there's a question right there. Yes.
Hi. Hi, I'm Megan Donahue. I'm a gender and education consultant, and I just have two questions, very quick. So for the community schools, do the parents pay for the community schools or any tuition? Okay, and if they do they have any say in what happens in the schools, like if teachers are absent, et cetera? And then for female education this morning, Sumbha, you said about the female teachers would benefit perhaps in the future. I'm just curious, how would you recruit for those teachers to ensure that they will empower the girls? Because it's a good idea, but sometimes it doesn't always work out the way we want. You can't hear me?
Yeah. So community schools, a question around paying for community schools and teachers. Okay. Excellent. So we'll come back to our panel. So a question around the budget for FATA, around religious muftis, community schools, teachers, very quickly, so that we can have another round of questions before we conclude at 2:10.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, the budget goes from the federal government. We call it NFC. NFC award. Every province has got its own share in the federal government. The KP has got its own share in the NFC award. And obviously, the FATA has got its own share, and that will go to the FATA. And as I have already mentioned, that the mega projects or socioeconomic plan is already there. One is for the 10 years, and the other one is for the 5 years. It is just waiting for the fund from the federal government. The basic aim of these mega projects, I already told you, that to bring FATA at par with the KP. And secondly, as Dr. Jamila has mentioned, that there is no judiciary system, no police system. So these all need, you know, financial fund from the federal government. Obviously, to have infrastructure for the policing and for the judiciary system, obviously, we need fund from the federal government. So we are waiting for that.
Just very quickly, the NFC is the National Finance Commission. So they're not merging the NFC award for KP and the newly merged districts? It's not going to be one award?
It will be merged together, but the share of the FATA will be there in it.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Yes, on your religious leaders question, you would be amazed to know that data from my research, particularly in Khyber and Mumad, says that religious leaders no more are interfering into education. So that's a good news. On the contrary, I think Mr. Abbas can later tell you more about some reforms they have already done in madrasas, so that the religious leaders can be made like a mainstream teacher. So they have a positive role to play, and that's what I heard even from the communities, that if these religious leaders and madrasas have more formal education included into their curriculum. So that's when, you know, they become more, they can become catalysts. Why? Because many parents prefer religious education over the worldly education. So having them sent to madrasas where the worldly education is also possible is an opportunity. So yes. And then the other question was about teachers. I think that's still a struggle, as Abbas Saab also said. We need more graduates in FATA if we have to hire local teachers. And then when it comes to training, I think my recommendation to Abbas Saab is, and I've already talked to him, is that focusing more on the in-service training or capacity building on job. Because we cannot wait for 3 or 4 years for having new teachers who are well-trained. So we need to really focus on the current teachers, whoever they are, because some of them are very low-qualified. So it will really need a huge amount of work on them so that they first understand how important girls' empowerment is, because convincing them first is important. And then we can inculcate that into the girls. So I think that's a huge task. I don't know how Abbas Saab will plan for it.
I'm just adding one thing about the Dini Madaris, religious schools. So the government is also trying, to bring them on the mainstream. So FATA is one of them that we have started projects for them. We are giving teachers to them. They are recruited by them, but we are paying them. So they are teachers who will teach the students mathematics, English, science, and computer as well. And from the next year, we will also provide them free textbooks as well. So in this way, those students who prefer to go to madrasa in order to get religious education, so obviously they will get the modern education as well. So at least these students, they will pass their secondary examination and they will come for their assessment to the different boards. And secondly, I just want to mention about the non-formal schooling. That is a community school. This is one type of the non-formal education. We hire a teacher for them, and basically they are local teachers in the female schools. And they have their own building. Either it is a room from the school or it is a hujra. We call it hujra, mean a guest room-like building. So the female teacher, they bring the local students teach them for the entirement, and then we pay them. And the parents do not need to pay for their kids because under article and constitution, the government is bound to provide free and compulsory education. The students, they do not pay the fee to the school. Even we provide free textbooks to them. The only thing which they do, the uniform they are supposed to buy. The government was also planning to give them uniform, but there was the issue of, the sizes was there. So it postponed the idea. So the parents are supposed to give them the uniform. And, there are reasons, for multiple reasons for dropout and out-of-school children. And poverty is one of the reasons. While sitting in this posh and cozy room, you cannot imagine the status of those people, In severe weather condition, in cold condition, I have seen that most of the students, male and female, they come to the school even in the slipper, rubber shoes and only socks they wear. If we ask them why you are not wearing proper boots and shoes, they say we cannot afford it. So the poverty is one of the hurdles for not sending their children. And secondly, Sumbal has mentioned that the primary education and secondary education. So if we see the graph, there is huge dropout while jumping from primary to middle school. And the only one reason is that parents cannot afford, you know, the children to send them to the school. Instead of sending the children to the school, they prefer the girls to work with their mothers in the home, and the boys who pass fifth class, they make them unable to either to do something, help with the father, or send their, you know, sheep to the field in order to graze them. So the major work are, you know, these for them, not to send them to the school.
Jamila?
One question about the teachers, because KP has this system that they don't know. They no longer require any teacher, pre-service teacher education. They induct teachers, and then they give them an induction training of 9 months or something, 6 months, and that is off job and before job. So that is a model which the question on teachers that may help, that this new system when KP will be, Pata will be merged with KP. And on religious leaders, but when we talked, it was about the gatekeepers, that they are usually the gatekeepers, and in community schools, and when some services were provided in different parts when I studied those models, religious leaders were involved so that they would not resist these services in the area. And as Sumbul said, that there is no resistance from religious leaders anymore. But as far as the madrasa system and then providing more general education in madrasa along with religious education, that is a deeper issue, and that is something which is like more complacently dealt with, because like there are a number of researches, and I know Madhya's research as well, that even in public schools, the curriculum and the textbooks which are taught, they are no different from what is taught in madrasa. So when we talk about that madrasa is part of the problem, it is not just madrasa. So it is irrespective that whether we are providing general education in madrasas or we are providing religious education in public schools. This whole system, the textbooks, they are hugely infused with the ideas, ideology, which was promoted at certain time, which I mentioned to the War of Titans. So that was the time when this ideology was infused in the curriculum, and it remains there. So whether students are going into the madrasa system or the public sector system, the results are the same. They come out mainly with similar worldview, and there are researches, Dr. Tariq Rahman and other people who have been writing on it for a long time, and Madhya has also done some research on it. There are serious issues with curriculum which need to be tackled, irrespective whether it is FATA or KP or anywhere in Pakistan.
Thank you. Unfortunately, there is no more time for questions, but just following up very briefly on Jamila's point and then wrapping up our wonderful panel today. Islamist parties in Pakistan are a huge obstacle to both curriculum reform as well as reform and regulation of Pakistan's madrasas. This is not just a problem in Fatah. This is a problem for the whole country. And so how the current government addresses that challenge is something that will remain to be seen, and it's not going to be easy given, you know, the protests and that we've seen in the past week and the emboldening of Islamist parties over the decades really in the country. Please join me sort of thanking this wonderful panel, Mr. Abbas Khan and Dr. Jamila Razak, who traveled from Pakistan, Sumbul Naveed, who gave a very compelling presentation and has a wonderful paper out on leveraging political transitions for girls in the tribal areas of Pakistan. I think it was a very rich discussion. We really saw a granular picture of life for girls in Fatah and really the barriers for educating them, but also the opportunities ahead. So I think it was a very constructive discussion as well. So please join me in thanking the panel.